Thank you very much. And yeah, thank you very much for coming. And thank you very much for giving me the time for giving the talk. And I wanted to give this talk here mainly because I would like to learn from you. I started to do some work about the translation process, which I will talk about today. And then I start to think about why sort of there is this codon bias and so on. And I wanted to learn how people studying evolution think about this sort of codon bias. So that I will be very much welcome any comment about this. Yes, and yeah, it's the collaboration with Kim, and also the Stin is the biologist who I collaborate with. And so this is about the translation process, and I don't have to go through this, but the basically in the translation process, this huge machinery ribosome read the codon, the three nucleotide, as I said, and then the transfer RNA carries amino acid, and then it goes to the polypeptide and so on. And but if you look at the codons, then of course there are 64 codons, but there is only 20 amino acids that there are synonymous codons. And this is the table of this synonymous codon usage for E. coli, which I will sort of talk about later. So that's the following simulations are all about E. coli. And here is the codon. And then this column gives you the amino acid. And then this number gives you the ratio of this codon usage for a given amino acid. So for example, for this amino acid, it has two choice of codons, UUU or UUC. And then if you look at all the genes, then the 57% of this amino acid is UUU, and then 43% is UUC. So this one doesn't have much strong bias, but for example, if you look at these six codons, which all, again, the code the same amino acids, then here you see strong bias where this CUG is used for 46%, but say this CUA is used only 5%, and so on. And then the question is why it is like that, and then the argument I the most often hear is that it's because the people say that the found that highly expressed genes seem to have a stronger bias on the codon usage, and the one that is used more often will appear also more on the highly expressed genes. And then the why is the question. And then of course people say that the codon used more frequently should be more efficient. And then what efficient mean can be various things. But then the one thing is it can be faster to translate. And this has been confirmed experimentally. I also talk about it a little bit later, but also that there is some correlation between this most often used codons and the transfer RNA abundance and so on, so that they are faster to translate and probably also then less likely to be mistranslated and so on. But then, if this were the only argument, then my naive question is that why the cells still use the rare codons in their genes. So why they keep them? Of course, I think it's good to sort of keep the function to translate them, but I thought it's not really necessary to use in their own genes after they evolve enough. So that's my naive question. And then as far as I know, there are sort of a few works that indicate more sort of active role for the rare codons or slow codons. And one thing I read in a few papers and I will not talk about is the protein folding, where the people say that sometimes they find sort of between the folding domains they find the rare codons. So that's sort of helping the protein folding, so that the translate first half and then fold and then go to the next That's one argument. And then I will give sort of two other arguments here. They are both related to the ribosome traffic. And now I'm slowly moved to what I would do. And what I do is that to view this translation process as kind of a traffic flow problem. But then, as I said, all the codons have a different property, and depending on the codon, maybe it's some part are slow to translate and some part are fast. So I just try to simulate this and wild-type gene using some input from the experiments. And then one suggestion is that for the role of rare codon is that it can be used to control the traffic jam. And then another thing is, I don't know how much I can talk about it, but we found some correlation between the mRNA half-life and the ribosome traffic, which is also the controlled mainly by rare codons. But if you have more argument about why they still have rare codons, then I would like to hear very much. What I do is, as I said, I do basically the simulation of ribosome traffic. Then I need to assign the rate translate each codons. And then my collaborator, Steen, had done the experimental, in vivo experimental work to determine the speed to translate a particular codon. And I can explain how he did it, but if you are interested, just ask how was it. But for now, please take the number as given. And then, in this work, he measured four codons. And then, for example, he measured the GAA and GAG. And these two are coding the same amino acid. And also that they are read by the same transfer RNA. But the transfer RNA is cognate with GAA, this last GAG, just G is kind of this wobble base, so that it's not completely cognate. And then the number here is the rate that we measure, which is codons per second. And then the estimate is GAA is 35 codons per second, and then GAA is 7.5 codons per second, roughly. There is some error, but there is quite big, roughly five-fold, four-fold difference between the two. And then also he measured two more. One is CCG, and then another is CGA, and then this one was a similar speed of this CAG, and then this CGA was quite slow. So we have these four numbers so far. We are working on it to get more number, but for now, to simulate the whole gene, we decided to categorize the codons depending on this codon adaptation for the highly expressed genes. And then we call that the one that's often used for highly expressed genes have the A rate, which is the fastest. And that sort of its number came from this GAA. And then the sort of middle one, we call them as a B rate. So that is this around 8 codons per second. And then the really rare codons, we assign the rate C, which is roughly this 4 codons per second. So that's what we assigned for the whole codons. And then we take the sequence from the yes, yes.
I'm sorry, can you go back and?
Yes.
I'm sure you said it, but I just didn't hear how you assigned the letters to the ones that you didn't measure.
Yes, so there is this so-called codon adaptation index, which indicates which one is more used more in the highly expressed
gene. So then GAA has a very high
index. Yeah.
And CGA, the slow one, has a very
high. Yeah.
So you just bin them into three classes.
Yeah, roughly. Yeah. And the only exception actually is this CCG. This one is among think this amino acid, it was most highly used one. So that this should have been fastest, but then we measured and it was rather not very fast. So then for this one, we assigned this middle rate, and then the rest we assigned that it should be slower, so that we assigned the slower one. Yes.
So, I mean, when you look at the distribution of codon annotation index across all these codons,
yes.
I mean, I presume it doesn't really look like there are three classes.
No.
You're sort of putting these three classes.
Yeah, so this is the simplification.
So why don't you just assume, let's say, rate is proportional to the index or something like that? Why do you force it into three classes?
We thought it's simpler. Yeah, but of course there can be sort of other simpler way.
Simulation is presumably the same. I mean, maybe for some analytical theory. But since you simulate it, you can throw this dice three times or throw that continuously or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, well, also at the same time, it's sort of, since there is this example where sort of the highest index one amongst these amino acids can be not very fast, so that I think it's still kind of arbitrary. So that I hope the message we get out from the simulation is not very sensitive to such kind of the choice. But that's what I hope, but I don't know. Yeah. And so that's what we assigned for the rate. And then our simulation is rather simple. We just say that each codons are sort of one site, and then ribosome is huge, big object which occupy 11 codons, and then they come with a certain rate, and then they hop with a rate that is sort of assigned from this table, and then when the only interaction between the ribosome is that if there is another ribosome in front, then this guy cannot hop until the front one is gone. And then, for example, this is the sequence of the rate from the lac Z. So then the yellow one is the fastest, and then the blue is the middle one, and then red is the slow codon. So that you can see sort of where are the slow codons. And then if I use these rate that we assign, then we can sort of see some blob moving, and then we can also make, this is a spatial-temporal plot, this axis is time, and then this axis is position on the mRNA, and then when there is a ribosome, then I put red dot here, and then you can see that the things are moving that direction. And this is actually Java applet that you can play with, so if you are interested, please visit our website. But here, I just go on to report what I saw. And then basically what we saw is that, for example, this is the simulation of the wild type lac Z. And then again, this is the spatial-temporal plot. And then this one is actually the simulation where we had the very long insert of slow codons, and then you can see that the things are sort of piling up here, so that this speed difference is enough to make some kind of traffic jam if you have them a lot at the latter part of the gene. But this is sort of what the simulation of what happens if you put such an insert. And of course, in the wild type, you don't have such a stupid sequence that you don't really see the traffic jam. But one thing we noticed is that if you look at this part is at the beginning of the gene. And then we can see that the density of the ribosome is rather high compared to the rest of the gene. And that's simply because if you look at this sequence, then we have more rare codon at the beginning. And it's just that. But actually, there is already a report in 80s that there is a tendency that there is more rare codons at the beginning of the mRNA than the later of the mRNA. So this is not only the LACC. So then by knowing this and this, we thought that maybe this can have some kind of regulatory function, which is that it can reduce the effect of traffic jam. So basically, if you have the fast site here and then slow site at the close to exit, then of course all the ribosome will pile up. And then this will sort of slow down the traffic, and that doesn't really matter for the production of the protein, because it's just there is a delay of time, but they will get out what they started. But the problem can be that this will use a lot of ribosome, so that will reduce the ribosomal turnover sort of in overall cell. So this can be some sort of energetic cost for the cell. So then if you move this slow site for the latter, then if you get sort of more and more ribosome try to come in, then you will simply occlude the ribosome binding site. That's then after this slow site, this ribosome can translate happily after this. So then this can be more efficient in a translation. Yes.
What does your model assume about how ribosomes are actually loaded onto the very first codon?
It's
a rate.
It's just a rate. It's just a rate.
Less how it is done in biology or in real cells or?
There is several steps, of course, if you go into the thing. But so that this one step is approximation. Well, actually, no. This is actually
slow codon at the very first point, and then you can, if this very slow codon is at the very first position, then you can avoid the traffic jams altogether.
It's not only very fast in a sense that they have some size. So yes, and actually I forgot, there is this loading and then I have some waiting time there because there is a little bit of lag time to assemble the ribosome.
It can't be the very first one because all proteins are the same.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
5% are QT genes, right?
Yeah, but still majorities are, yeah. So that, yes, so that, that's what we thought. And then what I try to do after this is that so that if this this is sort of nice story, but if it matters, then yes.
I'm just trying to understand what is the. I mean, if there is a certain amount of rate, a fixed rate of loading new ribosomes, right?
Yes.
And they don't fall off.
Yes.
Then if you are in some steady state, that sets the rate at which they come off at the other end.
Yeah, so that's exactly true. So the production rate will be the same.
Yes.
But the thing that matters is that the time that ribosomes spend on the mRNA. So the ribosome is huge protein, and they are, as far as I understand, they are quite busy. So if they have to wait a lot of time to go through one gene, then they cannot. But if it's this situation, then the one sitting here can go to other genes and translate them, right?
If you want to minimize the time the argument is you want to minimize how many ribosomes are on a given mRNA on average.
Because
you agree that total production is the same, then
if you load the same number, then they will finish at some point. In that sense, it's same.
And isn't it still true that what you said at the beginning, that if you just use only fast codons, that is still the best solution?
Yes, that's what I wanted to say, but I would like to move on.
Guess kind of what you are talking about is some sort of trade-off, because essentially what you are saying is that they should wait at the beginning to let the other one move and avoid gems, but on the other hand, and that would avoid these gems and conditions. On the other hand, they can wait while they collide, and I think this wait time compensates another wait time, so at the end of the day you have steady state. I think that you replace one wait time by the other wait time.
I don't. So that's the difference. difference is that the waiting time to, waiting time to load can be used for other genes. But if you are already loaded, then if you are waiting here, then it's wasted time. In that sense, I think those two are different.
That is the advantage. But if you use slow codon, isn't it probably, I understand it incorrectly, but kind of if the M terminal is a slow codon, then it will load, but it will stay there, right?
The number is only small number. But if the traffic jam is from here, then you will get a lot of ribosomes waiting there.
Right.
Okay.
The next one will
not. Yes.
Those collisions, aside from slowing down the rate of production, do they have any other consequences? Like, can they actually get the ribosome out of the RNA or cause or something?
There is some argument about this slowness can sort of make the mistranslation more likely and so on. And that is not considered in this model, but that can be, of course, another. Yeah. Yes?
When you talk about the fact that you can get rid of all the jams by having a smaller load rate.
That's.
It could be equivalent, so you have only codons and smaller load rate.
That's true. If your own rate is low, then you can reduce the traffic jam. But if you change the own rate, then you also change the output. So the. Like how many protein you get per time. So that's sort of, I guess, they want to optimize in some way. Yes.
This is maybe the next thing you're going to say, but and it's not really my field, but my intuition is because it's stochastic, even if you load only with fast codons, there will be traffic jams.
Yeah.
Because some time will happen to move slowly.
That's caused some delay. But still, it's much better. If everything is fast, then it's much better than having different rate.
I see.
Yeah. But that's I will talk about. I would like to talk about here, actually. So the my question was sort of, then if this were true, then I should mention that. It's not only us, but there are some other people saying this traffic jam business. And then if it were true, then I thought that I should probably check how good it is to have this slow codon at the beginning, since we have some kind of simulation model. So then what I do is now that to take this gene, then compare the wild type with some other usage of codon. And then one thing I do is the swap codons among the synonymous ones. So if I have the codon UA, then I will swap sort of this codon among these six. But then that ratio, I will use this probability. So that I will, in that way, I keep the protein same, then just change the speed. And but this is one thing I do. And then another thing I do is I swap all the codons to the fastest one. So that's the sort of I think the best they can do. So I just see how far they are compared to the best one. And then I also did sort of swapping among the synonymous one inside the same gene, sort of, because some genes are adapted, as I said, so that some genes have much better codon usage. So that I do the randomization compared to the sort of global distributions, and they will be much worse than the wild type. So that I also did this, but I think I will not. Yeah, I can show this, but I will mainly talk.
So you will show us what happens if you swap to the fastest, right?
That's exactly this one, and then this one is LAC-Z, and then this axis is the on rate, sort of how often the ribosome try to load. But of course, if the ribosome binding site is occluded, then they cannot load. And then this axis is time to translate the whole LAC-Z. And then this red dot is the wild type. And then, so this is time, so the lower is faster, so is better. And then this blue one is the average of this randomized one. And then here you can see that the randomized one can get quite slower when the on rate gets very high. And so that this is because of the traffic jam. And the wild type is good to manage it compared to the randomized one. But if you look at the fastest one, it's much better. So here I also show the distribution, and it's a little bit complicated to see, but these there is a thin line and thick line, and then thin line is the data for this zone rate, which is we used in the previous simulation where we estimated in the experiment in the minimal media. And then this thick line is when I use the twice as many as much on rate. So and then and red lines the now the time to translate is this axis, and then these lines are where the wild type is, and then this blue line is the distribution out of this randomized one.
But I do not understand is why would the time to synthesize the gene translate the gene, why does it decrease when you increase on rate? I mean, it can be.
No, it's not decreasing. It's increasing.
How does it increase? That's what I meant. Why is it worse to have much on rate?
Because it collides more.
Traffic jam.
The traffic jam. So they collide more.
But I guess the biologically beautiful thing would be one per meter, would be the actual amount of rate of production, protein production. It should be exactly the product of the two axis mass.
Another, the actual production is actually the, well, not the product, but how often they can load
I also multiply by the effective rate which is loaded.
I also looked at it, but that is affected a little bit, but not as much as this time to translate. So this is not about the production rate of protein, but more about how long time they spend on that.
You may mention that there is certain functionally defined production rate. You just need so much of this protein. You are willing to, and then the goal of evolution is to do whatever it can to, given the production rate of a protein, to optimize
That's very true. That's very true. Yeah, so if one can do such a thing, then it will be great. Yeah, so here what I see is that compared to this distribution from random one, the wild type is staying on the fast side, but because it does manage this traffic jam, and especially when on rate is high, then some of them really get huge traffic jams that they can get really slow. So compared to that random one, this is better. But it could have been done much better by just having stronger bias, so yeah.
Just so I understand, so the on rate is the rate at which you're trying to put, not the rate at which it will actually.
That's right. Yeah. So that's why sort of here it looks saturated. So the actual on rate doesn't really change after this. Yeah. This is what
I see. But if you plotted this as a function of the not the rate at which you try to put, but the effective rate at which you end up putting them, then maybe it will be a little bit easier to read this.
That's probably
the
true.
The product of the two will give this factor production rate.
Yeah, I think a little bit more meaningful plot would be at least, I don't know, it's in the eyes of the beholder, but if you plot this time or something like time to translate as a function of ribosomal concentration. That's kind of
That's true. Yeah, this is the ribosomal concentration.
And then they try the attempt to land on the messenger. And then, I mean, per ribosome you will get this one, but the total flux will increase with the increase of ribosome concentration, because I get a little bit of the aspect here is that it seems to predict that the more ribosomes you have, the more time it will take to translate, which of course is not true because it's per ribosome.
It's But so that this suggests so that if you can stop the traffic jam, then they can go to the other gene. That's the argument. So the
that's not here. This argument is not here. It's I mean it's not in your model. I mean it's implied, but
yeah, that's true. It's not to that. Not I'm not simulating that. That's very
it's
true.
Distribution.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. So this is what I see for luck Z. And then I also try to see several other genes, but I take on two extreme examples. One is luck I, and then this luck I doesn't care traffic jam at all. So that this is now the same plot as this one. So that this is the distribution when the on date is normal, and then the ride type is on the slower end. And then if I randomize them with the higher on rate, then they are also sort of roughly in the middle. So that it seems like they don't really care the traffic jam. And
no variance.
No.
The wild type has no variance as compared to the random one.
Well, because it's wild.
This I'm only plotting the average, but I could plot the variance, but the variance is much narrower. Yeah. So here the luck I doesn't seem like it cares, and in a sense, sort of, it might make sense because luck I copy number is normally quite low, so maybe they are not really translated often enough to feel they should minimize the traffic jam. And another thing is this ribosomal protein RPLL. And then here, these guys are really strongly biased. So that if you compare it with sort of this randomization in compared based on the distribution for the whole cells, then they are much better. But I don't claim that this difference is meaningful, but one thing I noticed is that actually when on rate is high, that this fastest one, where I use all fastest codons, is actually slower than wild type. And that I was a little bit confused. And then what I noticed by looking at the sequence is this. So they have two sort of MyB codon, which is non-optimal one here. And then of course it should be faster if you get rid of these two guys, I thought. But then when I look at the sequence, then they have this CCG here, and this is for the this is the one that we measure the speed, and we found that it's not fastest. As a speed. So then in the simulation, what happens is that if you remove these two, then you will get traffic jam basically from here, and that slows down the situation a little bit. So the one argument is if you have to have codons that is slower for the latter part of the gene, then it also might make some sense to have slow codon at the beginning, sort of, in addition to this sort of must one because of the protein, or maybe it can be because of this protein folding something. But if you have the slow codons for later, then it's better also to have a few of them at the beginning. That is my argument. But I'm still a little bit puzzled, especially, for example, if they care about the traffic jam in this luck Z case, then they could have done still better by having faster ones. So I don't know sort of why, whether this is actually because of the traffic jam or there is some other reason to have a rare codon at the beginning, and it also happened to help this feature. Yes?
Let me just...
No, maybe the fastest you have here, maybe it's not the actual fastest.
Yeah.
One solution.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would reduce the number of traffic jams, faster.
You mean the?
I mean, I'm just saying that it's not because you take the fastest codon at each step that you get the fastest solution, right?
Evolution really takes you to the absolute global optimum, right?
Yeah.
How much you care, right?
Yeah. So that's one way, I guess.
Also, to compete that kind of, it's, you know, in yeah. traffic regulation, actually, in some cases, for example, if you have a tunnel, you are likely to have traffic jams.
Yeah.
Sometimes they will actually regulate the ins.
Avoid
traffic jams.
So if these guys have the reason to have a slower codon for the latter parts, then they should also have slower one. That's
In fact, on the highways in Long Island, they install those special traffic lights when you enter the highway. When they know that there are traffic jams on the highway, they let the cars in at a slow rate.
Oh, that's smart.
They turn on those traffic lights only when they know that there are traffic jams.
Yeah.
So if nature was to invent something like this, it would just have those red things.
Regulated
with respect to how much.
Also, the one thing I should have, mentioned is that this rare codon is not only just slow, but also they should be more sensitive to the substrate level. So that when the situation changes, then the rate changes more sensitive for the rare codon. So that might also be good for the traffic.
But pretty much the RNA level.
Yeah, for example, yeah.
So if you go forward to this slide, then one more, I guess? No. Okay. Yeah, so you've got the slower codon, like CCG.
Yeah.
And so it might be that is conserved historically to, you know, from, so it you can't optimize it to be faster because it's too important in interacting, for instance, you can't optimize it to be the fastest, but you can optimize it to be faster by having the speed bumps at the beginning. Do you know if any of these codons are the slower codons in the later part are conserved across different taxa?
Oh, you mean if I
take
the same protein for different species, and then if I compare,
RGL.
Actually, we did a little bit of that between like for Salmonella, for example, and we did check on the sort of the frequency of rare codon at the beginning compared to the latter, and they had tendency to have slower at the beginning, but we didn't really compare sort of whether they are conserved.
I'm assuming this is E. coli.
Yeah, this is E. coli.
Versus Salmonella.
Yeah, that's good
that
point.
That codon be conserved.
Yeah.
I guess maybe along similar lines. I mean, I know you said you tried a few genes, but have you tried like most genes or not?
No, only so far. 10 or so.
Okay, because I guess it would be interesting to see like if it kind of correlated with the functional class or something.
Yeah, in that sense, sort of the most of them, I can make arguments that the one translated more often, or like for example, I would say that the enzyme would be translated often when they are needed. Of course, when they are not, then they are not translated. But I think enzymes tend to have this feature, but the transcription factor does not. That's a tendency, but I cannot say for sure. Yes.
Do you think so? You said earlier. I mean, I'm coming back maybe to a previous point I stated, but you said maybe it could be. Some people think it could be associated with protein misfolding or something. So do you think it could be also associated with like proteins that needs to be always like very like let's say like the concept of housekeeping genes compared to
genes,
which could be hypervariable or something like that?
I didn't think about it, but yeah, possible, I guess. Yeah, interesting. Any other questions? Yeah, and I think actually I used my time so that. This is this traffic jam part, and I think I don't really talk about it. But another thing I worked using this model with this, with the experiment is that we sort of try to find some correlation between the traffic or the distance between the ribosomes and the mRNA half-life, and we had some we find some positive result about the if you have the space at the beginning of the genes, then you your half-life can be shorter the in the than the other, and that's sort of related to where is the rare codon also. So that's another thing that I could say that if this is the case, then this can be also have some become some reason to have rare codons in our system. And this half-life part is in collaboration with another a lot of people who did actual experiment. But if you are interested in this part, then I can tell you later. But that and also the so this is these are my argument for why they still keep the rare codons. But if you have, I guess you have a lot of more information than the, what the thought about the why they keep the rare codons. So I'm very happy to hear how you think. Thank you very much.
So I guess an obvious question is why doesn't it evolve to the fastest? What would prevent that? Except I don't know. I mean,
yeah, this protein folding and.
Step by step, describe the evolution, and that will be fine. You know? but still, I mean, I kind of if we follow this logic, then probably the best way to go would be to evolve the fastest codons. Right?
Yeah, still so this example is that sort of in this one. Sort of this. If you want this amino acid, then you have to use the not fastest codon for the latter. So the, if you have the reason to keep
You said that. I missed this argument. Can you please repeat?
Yeah.
So you need a particular amino acid scale, right? Which
yeah.
Is...
And this amino acid CCG is the most best codon.
Yes.
And we measured the rate for this CCG.
And it is still slow, right?
Yeah.
That is.
So that if you need this amino acid to make this protein, then you cannot move that.
So which means that there are some amino acids for which all codons are slow, right? That's what you are saying, and that is the is the reason. Right?
Yeah. And also, if this protein folding argument is true, that can also...
Yeah, that's a different story, of course, but I want to understand within your...
That is the reason,
Would those amino acids then be selectively avoided? So people talk about codon adaptation index, but you can extend it to amino acid adaptation index. Of course, some amino acids cannot be replaced because they are functionally necessary.
Almost,
but the ones which are...
All amino acids can be replaced, almost. I mean, you can replace almost any, not to any amino acid, but there are replacements and it very strongly anti-correlates with codons. I mean, very good observation on that. But so the question indeed, why doesn't nature avoid this amino acid more or less?
Mm.
Do you remember which amino acid is that? Do you remember this?
It's a proline.
Your team.
What was the genetic?
It's proline. Yeah.
No, proline cannot be replaced. No.
Okay. That's good to know.
Because it's not really amino acid. Yeah, it's amino acid.
So wouldn't your fastest sequence be one that matches the slowest part of the translation process to something at the beginning? So if those rates are equivalent, then you would get your...
I didn't get, so if the...
If you find your slowest part of the whole chain, so there in the proline...
Like here,
And you make the effective rate equal by putting slow codon at the beginning.
Yeah, then that's the best. Yeah, so the here sort of, this is our sort of middle speed codon. And then here also they have the middle speed. It's not the slowest they put. If they put slowest, then it gets, of course, slower. So the...
It matches.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know if you want to talk about the relative. I mean, obviously, there's a whole bunch of reasons why you want slow things at the beginning, or why you want particular codons at the beginning. It could be mRNA folding.
That's
it could
true.
Be something like
that's
you care
true.
A lot more about codon bias at the beginning because you don't want to make a mistake at the end because you're like, well, I've translated all this protein. Oh crap! I made a mistake in the last amino acid. That sucks. You want to say that? No, it matters, right? Because you've made all that protein.
But you're going to make it even if you made a mistake at the beginning.
Well, yeah. Unless it's a frame shift, in which case you probably, and I think this is the most common type of mistake.
That's true. Is proteins get degraded before they finish.
No, because I think frame shift is the most common type of error by far in the translation.
Proteins
don't get made,
right? Well, you get to a stop code.
Yeah,
well,
I see.
But I didn't get so that you want to make speed-ups of unicorn.
What is the relative? You don't know, I guess, the average relative speed-up compared to, say, the average number of mistakes that are made
I don't know. Yeah.
Like, I'm just wondering what the relative advantage of is from preventing traffic jams as opposed to preventing mistranslations at the beginning versus the end of it.
But if you don't have any mistranslation anywhere, that isn't it the best?
Yeah, sure it is. But my understanding is that, say, you know, there's these reports in yeast that 30% of all translation events of all proteins are mistranslated. Which is an enormous cost, I guess.
No, I don't. How did you get this number from?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, this is
it's 10 to the minus. I mean, the probability of error is 10 to the minus 4 with error correction. The probability of amino-acid error is 10 to the minus 4. How would you get 30%?
Yeah, I know these are numbers that I've read. Otherwise, I'm not saying that they're true or not.
I've also heard much bigger numbers from Friedrich.
No. But it's not physics. It's not Watson Crick. But you have 2 rounds of error correction, which will make to 10 to the minus 4.
About translation.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Translation. So the probability to mistranslate an amino acid to put the wrong one is 10 to the minus 4 per amino acid. Of course, Watson Crick will tell you roughly 10 to the minus 2, but there are 2 rounds of.
But I guess at the very least, you can argue that it depends on, let's say, if you have 4 leucines in a row, I don't know, let's say U, and you have 12 U's in a row, then the probability of having a frame slip there is enormous.
Yeah.
I mean, so let's say at the least it depends on.
How often would you get, I mean, in real sequences, 12 U's? Have you seen
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't want to stick any confidence on these numbers. I'm just throwing it out there because I've read.
Yes, but frame shift will be probably. I mean, it will kill protein altogether because then you'll mistranslate
the protein.
Then it will degrade quickly. Right. I mean, this protein wouldn't be made.
So this is my question: is how much selection is there against saying having a bunch of incorrect? I mean. My hypothesis here is right. The selection is stronger against having slow or, frequently mistranslated codons at the end of a protein rather than at the beginning. Because if you put them at the beginning, frequently you'll stop translating this protein because you get a frame shift. So when you get a frame shift, you care less. Mm-hmm. But you put it at the end when you get a frame shift, you care more because you bother to translate the whole protein.
I don't think so. There is also another thing, which is there is another biological factor which would probably suggest otherwise, because this is this N-terminal rule, which roughly tells you that there is a correlation between which two amino acids at the N-terminus and the lifetime of protein in the cell. So they degraded with the frequency which depends on which amino acids are at N-terminal. Which is not 100% correct, but there is good correlation with Warshawski law, which would probably suggest that there is a stronger selection on N-terminus, because if you mistranslate the N-terminus and put arginine there, then it will immediately degrade the protein. You made the protein, but the cell will recognize it as to be quickly degraded. So my guess would be that it will try to work hard at N-terminus to avoid this kind of thing, signals of fast degradation. By the way, have you looked at that kind of, because that can be simply the feature of the genetic code, so that you are by one nucleotide substitution are very far from kind of, it can select the codons in order to minimize the probability of single nucleotide change, which will bring you to these degradation signals. So, and that could be a possible alternative explanation of why it uses this slow codons, because they are more robust with respect to single mutation from very dangerous amino acids, which they can put as a signal according to internal rule. Maybe it's totally total BS, but maybe it makes some sense.
Leather to me. Another suggestion is to try to, it would be really neat if you can try to reproduce in your model this quantum bias itself. So what if you try to make...
To reduce the traffic jam in the system or something?
No, some people argue that the quantum bias is explained exactly by this tendency to... for nature to avoid mistranslation.
Yeah.
But it's not written in stone. I mean, it's just one hypothesis.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Yeah.
So if you try just trying to evolve your model self,
oh, okay.
You care about the overall energy kind of cost of producing its proto.
Yeah.
The proto is determined by its functional needs, but then it's free to do whatever it wants to minimize its cost.
Yeah. That's interesting.
So I'm also trying to get a little bit of a... So on the one hand, some people argue, well, all this quantum bias is because of, you know, mistranslation. And you're saying, well, maybe it's... Well, I guess what you're saying is you don't want to type straight out your ribosomes.
Yeah.
That's basically what you're saying.
Yeah.
So, I mean, can we imagine that... I mean, I can imagine that if you have a highly expressed protein, you mistranslate it often, that clearly is a cost.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Yeah, I agree.
And...
Yeah, so
high expressed things that they titrate, of course they will try to get out more ribosomes because they're more mRNA, right?
Yeah.
But is it, I mean, what factor are we talking about?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, what's up, speed?
Yeah.
Oh, speed is eightfold difference so far.
35 to 4.
Yeah, 35 and 4.
No, let's say you take your ribosomal guide, between the fast one and the randomized one, what is
So that sort of depends on the sort of white, if you compare it with white types, then in this case it's a big effect. It's also the Z is quite long, so that.
Can we see the next one? Because I mean.
In this case, still, Lacroix could have done better, but for a ribosome, you cannot do much better.
It's a factor 2-3, right?
Yes.
So I guess between different messages, right? You have two orders of magnitude variation in terms of the number of proteins that are produced per message. So is it right that for messages that have a lot of proteins produced per message, you see a much greater reduction in traffic jams?
That's bias should be there. Yeah, if it has a longer half-life, then it also has a higher chance of getting traffic jams. But this kind of bias.
Well, no, I guess that depends on the initiation rate, which varies.
Yeah, it's both. Yeah.
Two orders of magnitude.
But if the degradation is fast, then it doesn't really matter at the same time. So I think it's both, but I agree with it. Yeah, the initiation rate is a very important factor to
feather. The degradation rate, I think, varies only maybe a fivefold or something.
Which one?
Message degradation.
Yeah, that can be. Some of them is really short, like 30 seconds or something, and some of them are several minutes. So yes.
Two possible factors that I haven't heard you about is the stability of the messenger RNA and the possibility that the translation speed also affects the final folding of the protein. I think there's some evidence that that slowing down translation can lead to a differently folded protein.
Yes.
Is that also something that could play a role in this comparison here?
Not directly here, but sort of that might sort of. So then you have the reason to have a rare codon at a particular point, right? And then if you wanna, so that you can get traffic jam from there. And then you also have the reason to prevent that by putting more rare codon at the beginning. That is sort of relation to this, but I didn't really talk about
just
that.
Just in terms of rate of translation, but not in terms of a differently folded, differently functionally different protein.
That I'm not really talking about in this.
But do you know whether that could play a role here as well? Is that, I guess you can model the stability of the messenger RNA.
How?
So you can look at these programs, I think, that look at secondary structure.
And then stability. For yeast, measure that actually. I don't know if you can, if you have some data for yeast, but for yeast, all the genome-wide stabilities of mRNA, the lifetime of mRNA.
They have this recall. It's really bad.
Okay, yeah. So there is a database or not, then. Yeah, I think there is a data. But they're mostly chemical half-life, I think.
But it can actually manipulate stability of mRNA with a few quarters in the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah, that's also the thing that I didn't talk about, but yes.
Yeah, these things are being measured, but very noisily.
So it's tricky. Thank you very much.